come in the bathroom. So she should be in
the marido. One of marido is well dressed today, so he's coming in. I said that before we even know who's here, let's just deal with one housekeeping matter. Honourable members will know that we, if I'm not mistaken, last week or so, we dealt with the issue of the second commitment to the Kyoto Protocol. And we all agreed on us putting our signature on this second commitment as Parliament of the Republic. But we said at the time that the matter had not been referred to us. It was referred to us last week. So we will then do the necessary report to Parliament in accordance with what we agreed on, so that we are not surprised. We will report to Parliament and indicate when did we entertain this matter. And we all agree that we must ratify the second commitment, the Kyoto Protocol. So we will do that this week. That is the first issue. The second issue is welcoming all of you. We have called this particular meeting to deal with two issues. As colleagues we know, we met with the various entities that report to the department in a by-the-way manner when we were dealing with other matters, particularly when we were dealing with the budget process. So the entities came in, but we did not have ample opportunity to get exactly what the entities do, what the nature of their work is, so that as a committee we have this broader understanding of what the entities do. We therefore felt that we must create time and an opportunity to meet with the entities as the portfolio committee. This is the time where we are then meeting with two of the entities that are in the department. We are meeting today with the South African Weather Service and our institute on biodiversity. So we would like to welcome all of you. Also welcome the minister who's in our midst. We are most welcome, minister. Welcome the DG and the team that works with her in the administration. Most welcome again. By the way, we're with the minister the whole weekend because we had public hearings on climate change, sustainable development, and rhino poaching. In KZN, the minister was there on Friday, the minister was there on Saturday. We really appreciate that. Most appreciate it. Thank you, minister. Now, I don't know who then does the introductions. Maybe let me do the introductions of members. The members that are present here, the first one is honorable member Stanner. That's the first member here. You can just say Molo. You always like to say Molo. You can say Molo, honorable member.
But one goes with Molweni, Monke.
Thank you. The second honorable member is honorable member Sienkamp. Thank you. The third member is honorable member Madilo. Thank you. The fourth member is honorable member Kekana. Thank you. I think there are some members that might be joining us who are still not here. Honorable Stana.
Thank you, Chair. I just received word from my colleague, Thomas Adebe, that he's busy seeing a doctor and he won't be joining us today, so he's asked me to tender his apologies to you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think also we know that we have a standing apology for two of our colleagues. One, Bonomi, who was in hospital, has just come out of hospital. Again, if we can register his apology. The other one is Maluleke. Maluleke, who has been in hospital for quite some time. The good part is that he's now out of hospital. But the doctor has requested that he recovers from boom for now. So we've got these two members again, on whose behalf we'd also like to extend the apologies. But again, thanks for Mr. Harding. Product department, who then does the introductions? Did you?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister. The Minister of Environmental Affairs is in attendance, and we have the executive team from both the Weather Services and South African National Biodiversity Institute. So I'll allow the CEO to start, CEO of Weather Service, and then the Sunday team follows after that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tisha. Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members, and the Board Members of the Service, with us we have our Board Member, Professor Elizabeth Godong. She's also a committee member of all the key programs of the organization. I also have... I also have with us Mr. Mkelinda Bambi, who is heading operations, and also have our CFO, Ms. Marlies Hutemindwa.
Did you say that surname properly? What's the surname? Will that conclude the introductions of the...
Yes, sir.
Can we now go to Sandy?
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and greetings to the Minister and to MPs from the Portfolio Committee. My name is Tanya Abensa. I'm the CEO of South African National Biodiversity Institute. And with me, I've got Ms. Carmel Indizo, who heads up our research, policy, and knowledge management. I have Motetsi Kwakli, Ms. Motetsi Kwakli, and he's right at the back. He's our Chief Corporate Officer. I have Ms. Lebokang Radipeli, who's the Director and the Board Secretary, who's at the back there. And Ms. Alan Smith, who's our Director of Finance. Ms. Lorato Sitoyo, who is our CFO, is unfortunately on leave. Thank you.
Honourable members, the department officials you've seen before behind me, the DDG for Climate Change, Ms. Judith Belmont, the Weather Service falls under that program in terms of the program structure. And then we have Ms. Wasim Liveni, who is heading now on behalf of the Biodiversity Branch, and Ms. Mketeni is attending the JCS cluster meeting minister on our behalf. So they are responsible from the biodiversity program to transfer that to Sandy. So the department then respects our oversight responsibility performed by these two branches on the two entities. And then I have the team then from the Office of the DG and the Office of the Minister, thank you, and the Deputy Minister's Office here.
Thank you very much. Let's welcome all of you. We will say what we have always said to those that we have not spoken to. We are wonderful human beings. And rest assured, we will treat you as human beings. That's why we are part of the environment sector. Because in the environment, as our constitution alludes to, we need to ensure that people are protected from the harmful effects of the environment. So we will protect you also from the harmful effects of people as well. So, but we are most welcome. Indeed, as we have said, all that we want, just a briefing on what you do, but souls will also know that the last time we met, we had some serious issues. Those issues also related to the resource that the resources that have been reduced, financial resources that have been reduced, and we had asked the department working together with the entity and the treasury to find a way out of this difficulty. We hope that as you make your introductions of what you do, that matter does not slip your mind. You keep us abreast on that aspect. We will now hand over to the South African Weather Service to tell us about what they do. Oh, before, maybe the minister should just make some few remarks before.
Thanks, Chair. I really don't intend to keep long, but just to first of all pass our apologies to the Deputy Minister. She's not well. She would have been here otherwise. But also just to say that we are very grateful indeed for this interaction with two of our entities, that being the scientific ones that do work in support of the department and support of South Africa. They are both, SHINE in particular, is part of broader scientific community of South Africa, working under the leadership also jointly with the leadership of ST, Department of Science and Technology. So it's important that even as we share with you the work that we do today, maybe just to extend on that part as well, if we may. The issue that I think, because I'm going to be asking for an apology to be recused at some stage, you know, Tuesday, every Tuesday that IMP that makes me move away from this portfolio committee. So I'm going to attend that IMC at about 10:30, if you would let me be reduced at the time. But before I do so, I just want to quite right up front talk to some of the issues that pertains to source, particularly in relation to the finances. As we had concluded last time that there's a need to work on these matters of finance, without trying to defend anybody or treasury, I just need to clarify something that perhaps may not have been better clarified in the previous meeting, that the reduction in finances, that in funding that has happened, did not quite start with this past financial year, but in the previous one, and that was as of the time when there has been serious economic crisis that befell all of us as the world. And naturally, when a government like ours finds itself in that kind of a situation, there's always a shortfall in firstly, the money that's available to distribute across all departments and across all sectors. And I must say that we have been part of a collective at the current level that then show this need for us to really ensure that we work in such a manner that we ensure that finances are distributed equitably, yes, but in a manner that's not really compromising some of the activities like education, like health, and so on. I'm saying when there's a reduction, when there's nothing to distribute the income, in other words, even with our own salaries, if you earn at some stage far less or minus a particular percentage, we've got to ensure that there is a distribution that's a little fair. You know that that's for this particular year and that's for that particular period. As and when things improve, there will be that improvement, and that's the assurance that we got also for Treasury. So we agree with you fully that there is a need to continue to work on business cases that actually shows that SOAR's mandate is not a mandate that's not, what shall I put it, the public good. It's a public good that's got to be funded similar to health, similar to all other functions. So it's not just an air and a nice to have. Sometimes it's also recognized that there is a potential to raise money elsewhere, additional funds, which has been the issue that Treasury has been focusing on. And I'm sure CEOs and the board members will share with us today about some of those activities that we've been dealing with. So that on an ongoing basis, there is also this augmentation from the side of us as an organization to earn that money. So I'm saying it is not deliberate. It has never been deliberate, as some of the people out here put it. I don't know. Sometimes you read newspaper articles that say that the Minister of Environment has cut the budget. I don't know. It's just sometimes proof that we don't even understand how budgets are made. We don't receive a slice of money as for the entire sector, and then we cut the budget from source and leave the rest with it. So we don't even allocate it. We all receive as a collective from Treasury, and have had dialogues of this nature that I've been alluding to. Secondly, with regards to the source, but I must also say that the two organizations that we're dealing with here today have had their good performance for the past number of years. Even as of this year, I think the audits are good, the clean audits, and so on. So with regards to Sunday, just before I head on, it is an institution that's very, very good for us. And I think that's been very instrumental in ensuring that our science capacity is really just uplifted. But they're also attempting and working very closely with the research organizations, the universities, and so on, not on their own. And I think it's very important to also know those partnerships that we work on. Our CEO, by the way, is on a panel of experts of researchers appointed by the Secretary General of Ban-Ki-moon at UN level. And I think we are very grateful that one of our own has been selected, recognizing that capacity as, in South Africa. It's not our capacity, it's South African capacity. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Can we now hand over to the presentation on the South African weather service?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Usually when I start my presentation for the weather service, I do tell people that we don't break the ice when we talk about the weather. It's actually business. My presentation, I'll look at the weather service, the strategy and the challenges and the opportunities that are there. Starting with the mandate, our mandate is based on the Act, the South African Weather Service Act. We also look at the Public Finance Act, and also when we do the work and develop the strategy, we look at the priorities of the country, and also look at the key issues that that our clients, public good, and also commercial clients. Looking at the mandate itself, I think it's very important to highlight the key objectives of the organization. Number one is to maintain, extend, and improve the quality of meteorological service. And we have also been given an additional mandate recently of air quality also as well in provision of that information. And I think I'm always proud when I present around the South African Weather Service on an international level, Minister, because South Africa is one of the countries in the world that was the first one to have a weather service. We've got climate information that dates to 154 years. We are one of the oldest institutions. And the weather service was a part of the department, and now we are the custodian of that information and that knowledge. So it's one of the responsibilities of the organization to provide the base knowledge, science-based information. When you talk about climate change, and you also talk about climate variability, and talking about adaptation.
So the institution has been doing that over a number of years. And one of the areas that is very important for us to continue is in the Act is the provision of aviation information. So also the responsibility of aviation safety and also safety skies. And I think when we talk about that, it is important to highlight that the safety of skies, and if you look at the number of accidents when it comes to flights, is actually related to weather. More than 50% is actually weather-related accident. And when international civil aviation, they look at the different countries and analyze their capability when it comes to aeronautical make. They do that, and they can indicate in that country that there is a risk if you don't have an institution that is providing that work efficiently and also meeting the desired standard. So in a way, the information is also providing baseline information for the economic growth of the country. And when it comes to ease of health, the air quality is becoming a very important issue that we need to deal with, especially with issues of HIV and respiratory diseases that are happening. We have also been given that responsibility to look at. The beneficiaries of the work that we do is touching across agriculture, water, the different industry, energy, construction, and we also work very closely with the communities and the vulnerable communities. One of the things that a number of people probably they do not know is that the Weather Service has got a training center. That training center is the only one here in South Africa that is working with academic institutions and providing a practical experience for all the methodologies that, you know, some of them you see them on TV. All of them, they pass through that institution. And ones that are training within the organization, they pass through that institution. Even if it's the University of Pretoria, when people need to do the practical work, they work through the institution. Because of that, the organization has been recognized by the World Meteorological Organization in provision of training. We have a regional training center that is providing training also for the subject region and people coming from outside South Africa. In terms of the vision, we have looked at the vision of the organization and decided it is important.
Sorry, ma'am. The issues that are of importance that you keep on flagging, like these training centers, the regional training centers, I hope they are in the presentation.
Yes, yes, they are in the presentation. Yes. In terms of the vision and the mission, we believe and we are committed in making sure that our nation is ready to deal with issues of weather and ensuring that there is sustainable development and economic growth of the country. And we cannot do that without making sure that we've got the leadership within the organization that has got an understanding of the climate and the weather issues and also related sciences, because we do have the information. However, if we talk about the rain, we also need to have an understanding of the water. So issues like hydrometeorology, agrometeorology, those are issues that are really related to climate and weather. And look at also coming up with innovative applications that are useful for our public and also for the commercial entities as well. And we cannot do that without establishing collaborative partnership. That's the area of focus. Those are our values. Move to the next one. Coming to the our international obligations, that is the slide. One of the areas that we in Africa we are dealing with, which is a challenge when we talk about issues of climate change and its climate variability, we tend to have changes all the time of weather events that are extreme. It has been a challenge, but it's that we have a responsibility at the national level to work together with the department in coming up with adaptation and mitigation based information and knowledge information that can be useful to ensure that we are in a position to provide that information of saving lives and property. The other area that is very important for us that I spoke about, Chair, that we are the regional training center. So we have that responsibility for South Africa as well to ensure the sustainability in terms of meteorological competences. And we also have a responsibility working with academic institutions to build a national pool of atmospheric science and related science. One of the good things about South Africa that probably don't talk about a lot, we have a lot of trained scientists, and at an international level, they tend to be pushed all over. And we need to continuously train them. And even the commercial business now with the issues of climate change, they are starting to look for these competences. So we have that responsibility to make sure that they are there. One of the areas where there are no boundaries, and if you look at the challenges that we do have in Africa, if you look at some of the reports of the IPCC, Africa is going to be a hit-hard continent when it comes to issues of climate change. And what we've done in South Africa, together with the other services in the target region, we established a meteorological association of Southern Africa. And South Africa is the secretariat of that, through the South African Weather Service. And all the climate services in the Pacific region, we sit around the table, develop strategies together, and if there is a need for funding. Because with the weather, we share a lot of information. What is happening in another country can affect what is happening in South Africa. So what it means, if some of the Pacific countries, they don't have the necessary infrastructure to observe the weather, there's a challenge for us, the quality of the information. It becomes limited. So we've got that in the beginning, South African Weather Service served as a chairperson. We are the board members of that as well. The other area that is important, the WMO, the World Meteorological Organization, which is a UN body responsible for weather, climate, and water, has said because there are so many challenges in Africa, in terms of having the necessary infrastructure and the competences. And most of the weather services are not funded. And for us here, we are worried that we don't have enough funds. But when it comes to South Africa, South Africa is better than all the other African countries in provision of resources for the weather service. So African Meteorological Conference of Ministers responsible for meteorology was established, where a strategy for Africa has been developed, and South Africa has been identified as one of the key institutions that is actually driving the issues of meteorology and weather. To the point that, because you also have the space agency, we have been given the responsibility to start formulating the strategy around space weather. Because space weather actually affects the energy sector. So there is little knowledge and also expertise in that area. So South Africa has been requested to look at that. The other area, which is so important as part of our international obligation, South African Weather Service is the regional telecommunication hub. What it means, all net services in Africa, the English-speaking weather services in Africa, all the weather information, the baseline information, is collected and it's put to weather service. We also do the quality control, the quality assurance, and then it's sent to the WMO so that we can start developing models. When we talk about some of the reports that are coming from IPCC, they are using that information to come up with models of saying, this is what is going to happen in years to come.
Let me assist you again. What is IPCC? As a champion, I just want to be in the
Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So that institution is looking at the science. It's the one that talks about whether there is global warming or not. So they actually use that information. The other area in terms of the regional telecommunication hub, South Africa has a responsibility to monitor the weather, the sea surface temperatures and all that, to monitor the oceans, and you are responsible for the second biggest part in the world. America is looking after the biggest, and South Africa were looking after the second biggest. And the infrastructure that is required to do that, like the weather boys and others, that information also... the weather boys that are monitoring the oceans of what is happening there in order for us to have an understanding of the climate change issues and how can we deal with it and make the necessary predictions. And I've spoken about the Regional Action Center. The other responsibility, when it comes to the severe weather events, when they're happening, South African Weather Service is also a specialized regional net center where it provides assistance and information around severe weather. For example, recently, around 4 years ago, we established at an international level, it was the first one, the severe weather demonstration project with some of the 500. You notice now when there are severe weather or floods. For example, if you look at Mozambique, in the past they used to have severe flood and a lot of people dying. Now we've got that application where whether it's on a weekly basis or depending on the severe weather that's going to happen, where the weather service forecasters are working with the other weather forecasters throughout. And we also have the website where you actually share that information with them. It's part of those responsibilities. When it comes to long range forecasting, to see what's going to happen in the season and years to come, we are also a global producing center at that level. The other area which I'm also proud of, when it comes to satellite meteorology, we are the center of excellence that has been identified. And in fact, we tend to train also people coming even from outside South Africa. And also, when it comes to Okayo, we are a member of Okayo, but we also assist in making sure in International Civil Aviation Organization, we also play a very critical role in South Africa, where we also work very closely with institutions that do not have the infrastructure.
She's thinking what I said. Let's say that maybe CEO must talk to us also about why that's not quite here a point. The assistance we're giving to countries that are setting up their meteorological services in the continent, particularly. So it's important that includes Mozambique and others. And how many countries on the continent do have these services and how we're assisting them? Secondly, may I also just post a little bit? We are fielding a candidate whilst we are on the world because he's not coming international. We are fielding a candidate at World Meteorology Services. The executive secretary of World Meteorology Services contract is coming to an end. So the next portable best candidate is South African, who is now a deputy executive secretary. We have agreed as a country to fill that candidate now to become the executive.
Thank you, Minister. Now, South Africa is well respected internationally, and I think we stand a better chance. Coming to the assistance that we are providing to the other med services in Africa, the International Civil Aviation Organization has come up with the requirements that all med services throughout the world that are providing services to aviation, they need to meet certain standards. And those standards, and then they also need to be accredited for quality management. And that obligation we're supposed to meet in 2010. Out of the 54 countries in the continent. In 2012, we had only 5 of them. What it means for the continent, we're going to be seen as a continent
in terms of the safety of our staff, there is a question around that. But we then, South Africa was the first, one of the first entities to have the total quality management for the whole organization. Then we were requested by the WMO to assist the other net services here in Africa to get at least the quality management system for the aviation, for the aeronautical services that they provide. And we have managed, if you look at the budget region, Minister, out of the 15, the other, with the islands, out of the 15, around 80% now of the net services are close to getting the certification. So at least if you look at the budget region, we have done very well in assisting and training and having our people also assisting them. But countries like Kenya and others have come to us for assistance to start also the process. So we are sharing our knowledge with the other med services to ensure that that is happening. Number two, other than only predicting the weather members, we also have a manufacturing facility where we manufacture our own infrastructure, the automatic weather station, the automatic rain station, and we've got researchers that are trying to come up with the better technology as well. And that infrastructure, we also assist the continent, where we also sell the material, the infrastructure to them. And the infrastructure itself, it's made for the African conditions, because those are buying from all over and they tend to have challenges as well. With the infrastructure that we provide, we also provide training of their personnel on how to maintain that infrastructure. Because the biggest cost is around the maintenance of the infrastructure. But there are standards that are set that we need to do at certain times. So with that, it goes beyond South Africa, but water knows no boundaries. Well, looking at the achievements for last year, I think I'm not going to dwell on this one, because also the minister has indicated that the organization ordered an unqualified audit, and most of the things were done. Coming to the people, members, that are doing all this work that I've been talking about, we've got a staff commitment of 288 and a number of interns. 65% of that is Africans, and 9% of that colors, Indian, 2% and white, 22%. There is similar distribution when it comes to core skills and key core competences. As an organization, we had a program of making sure that people that are coming from previously disadvantaged communities, they are exposed to science. And they make sure that they are in the core business of the organization and the skills. So with all our programs, as indicated, members, we cater to the challenges that we have in terms of the grant. But when you look at the operational grant, over the years, with all the activities that have been happening, there has been an increase. And most of that increase in the beginning, we wanted to have skilled employees. And government managed to provide us with the funds to ensure that we employ the scientists, we train them as well. And it's only now that we're starting to have challenges to ensure that we grow that capacity. When it comes to regulated commercial, as indicated, members, the organization has got a lot of knowledge that is there, and the industry needs that knowledge. Over the last 10 years, we have been growing fast when it comes to the revenue, the regulated and non-regulated. For aviation industry, we have from the around 40, 30 million before, the aviation was not paying, before 2001. Aviation was not paying for these services. But we started with negotiations, and thanks to our government, in fact, Minister, a number of countries, they do not have
that as part of the regulations. It makes it easy for the Weather Service that is that terror that aviation has. So then after that, aviation revenue grew to around 81 million. But I must say, I also highlight that it has reached the plateau. We cannot grow it anymore. We will be making 79.80 from aviation, based on the services that we provide. And it's a cost recovery. I think it's also important. The services that we provide, there are no profits that are generated. It's to drive the economy of the country. Then coming to the non-regulated commercial, I've indicated the expectations that we have in actually having to have manufactured some of the equipment and all that. We have also grown that area of business, and we are planning to grow it in the next 5 years to close to 50 million rands. So it has been growing, the potential to grow it some more. As I will talk about it when I talk about some of the challenges that we envisage we are faced with. On a year-to-year basis, remember, we don't like to brag and say that we are in a institution without getting feedback from our stakeholders. On a year-to-year basis, we do a stakeholder perception survey and looking at some of the key activities. The overall satisfaction is our experience, and we are getting above 80s when it comes to that organizational quality of the service and quality of the product, and whether that information is reliable and all that. So I wanted to share that as well with the members. Some of the things that I think it's important to look at. When we said we are coming up with application for climate change variability and climate change, we in terms of the science, one of the very important things that you need to make sure that your institution, whether institution is providing accurate weather, is for severe weather events. And when the government provided us with funds to have the radar network, the scientists did not go to sleep. They look at ways and application and products that can assist us to be in a position to predict some in areas where we're not able to predict or forecast as accurately. For example, the issue of the hail as well, using those radars and making sure they're now cutting from the information that we need to give now. Is forecasting information that we need to give to disaster management is also accurate. When it comes to fire index, which is another area that is we tend to have problems with fires, we have improved the products that we have to provide to disaster management. The other area with the R&D work that we do is also coming up with scenarios that can assist also the provinces and also the department when we look at coming up with strategies. That is the baseline that is useful. One of the areas that I'm also proud of in terms of our technical people, we have infrastructure all over the place. And some of the infrastructure gets vandalized. So the scientists come up with an idea of also having an automatic weather station with a camera. And we thought we were doing it for us to manage the vandalization because we don't get the data, only to find that also the municipalities, they need that information. And we started the project with one of the municipalities. They also use it to monitor traffic. I'll show you one of them. So it's a multi-use that can be used for. And now we are starting, if you look at our revenues that are coming up for commercial, like to start to talk to national ports as well to use those that infrastructure. Because when it's windy and all that, they need to know what's happening there. And if the Israeli-based office, he can get even have the visual of what is happening in that area. The other one, community rail stations that we've come up with for the communities that are living very close to the rivers, that budget, you can actually connect it to your cell phone. And it will tell you that the meaning that the rain is becoming worse in your area, you need to make sure that you move your stuff out if there's going to be flooding in the area.
and we want to target pediatric advantage and the vulnerable community with that. So there are some of those. Coming to the strategy, looking at, we balance the parents and also the obligations that are there. And the issue for us is to ensure that we do have a web origination in dealing with the challenges that we are faced with. As indicated Chairperson and members, with our strategy, as we develop a strategy, we look at government priorities and align to that, and also we look at the national development plan and also some of the critical issues that we need to look at, skills that are necessary, and also assisting in terms of the infrastructure. Also assisting being part of the national climate change response plan. And we can do that with our technology. From 201 up to now, members, 201 up to 2011, the organization was in its growth phase and put a system in place. Now we are at a stage of consolidation. And from 2015 moving forward, the issue is the sustainability of the good work that has been done by the country. And our strategy is also based on, we are starting to get a lot of competitors. You know, when you start to develop markets, you have people that are coming from outside to also come in. So that is also another challenge that we are faced with when it comes to commercial. Next one. This is just to demonstrate the areas of involvement of the weather service, where there is a value add from the observation up to making sure that we provide long-term forecasting. And that information is assisting different industries as well.
So if I may, and honourable members, just to add a little, if you look at this particular issue, just to elaborate on an example, which I think you were forgetting, is that there's been a sharp outcry from South Africans that says, let's have a long-term vision, development of understanding what is likely to happen long-term in terms of weather, so that we can predict what actions we can take. We are now on consolidation, as CEO was saying. We're moving into sustainability. Currently, where you are, you can see that we can go up to more than 2 years of prediction of what's likely to happen. What is happening right now, the farmers in South Africa are being told that expect rain on such and such a day. There's gonna be flooding happening. The Orange River was badly wet, and so on. They get told every year where there's confluence of the two rivers. There's gonna be flooding, and remove your gadgets from the fields because there's gonna be flooding and they may be damaged. So they do have that information now. I'm able to stand up here now and say to my colleague in Mozambique through a telephone call, expect so much water 6 meters high or 10 meters high in your country, it will be arriving through your borders at 10 o'clock at night on such and such a day. Because we work together now, we can actually do that prediction through this kind of a service now.
Thank you. Also, in terms of research work, that is an area where we are putting emphasis in saying what's going to happen in the next 10 years, 2015. With climate, you look at 6 years, but the changes are happening quicker than that. There is work that is done there. This slide is demonstrating the infrastructure that we have. We have the automatic weather station and the rain stations throughout the country. And if you look at our radar network, it's covering the key areas and lightning detection network as well, which we are still expanding. And we are one of the countries here in the continent that has got that extensive lightning detection network. These are the objectives that we've set number one, we cannot do it. We need to make sure that we comply and then come up with these programs that I was talking about, programs and applications for weather and climate, change and adaptation. And we also look at developing new products also for the commercial industry as they start to require more of those. And we cannot do that without having to engage the stakeholders. Third one is making sure that we've got funds, looking at aviation and also commercial and the government funds. Okay. One of the things that this area, members, we are paying a lot of emphasis where we are looking at building our own capability internally, but also assisting in making sure that the country has got the expertise that are required. And we had a program that has been working for some time and has managed to get a number of scientists that are joining the institution, as you see one of the slides that you're looking at the core competences that are required. We cannot do that without those resources. We need the infrastructure, human capital, the technology is changing, the financials, and the intellectual property that we also need to manage very closely. For example, that community of engage that we have established, we have a tendency on that. As we develop some of these innovations, we start to also look at patenting them. This slide, I'll also talk about it, projected income. This is what we are at the moment with the work that we need to do, that we are looking at the total revenue for 2014-15, 317 million, following year, 203 and 2020, 446 million to do the work that is required. What is the challenges that is around, if you look at the way that is presented, the income, we will also, because of depreciation and amortization, have a deficit, not based on the cash or, but because of the deficit of the infrastructure that we have. But if you look at the operational surplus or deficit, the next 2 years we are projecting to break even, and then in the years to come to start making some profit, having some surplus. That's the detailed financial projections. And moving forward, members, we have been given funds for the CAPEX budget for us to maintain and enhance and develop and come up with quality information. These are the projections in terms of the CAPEX budget that we'll keep on talking closely with the National Treasury together with the department to ensure that the quality of the information that we provide is good quality and the infrastructure is actually maintained. Some of the risks that we have identified when we are doing the risk profile that are key for the organization is the infrastructure management, the funding, and also the slow pace of commercialization. These are some of the key areas that the board is having an eye on together with management in dealing with the issues. The programs that we have, looking at the 5 programs, which I will talk about. The first program is on climate change and variability. This one, we have to look at the severe warning system, looking at the key one is the flash flood guidance system that we come up with, and the early warning system that we also come with for severe weather. Not for only South Africa, we also provide that for the Sahel region. These are the programs that are linked to the strategies of the department. I think members, when the department was presenting, they highlighted on those ones. Moving to the next one. On the commercial side, we are planning to grow the commercial, having different partners as well,
for the life of years, one of the partners that we've identified, we really moved from less than R1 million to R5 million, and our projections are more than that. And in totality, for the commercial non-regulated, we are looking at 5 cents to move to around R50 million. This is the area, members, that I think is an area that we need attention and funds, because our infrastructure to do all this work is really not cheap, and it's also specialized. One of the areas that we need to look very closely when we have this infrastructure is the preventative maintenance plan, and also ICT that is supporting that. Those are the key challenges that we need to be dealing with and making sure that we maintain. One of the issues as well is that when it comes to that infrastructure, in terms of the International Civil Aviation Organization and also World Meteorological Organization, there are set standards for the availability of data. And if the data is not, we don't have maintenance for it, the availability of data becomes less than the minimum standards required. So there are compliance issues as well.
There's just an additional issue here as well, which is there's this thing called SACQUIS. You recall that we have added a function here on air quality that comes from this reduced not serving as the host of that information on air quality, which never used to be here before. So, yeah.
When it comes to the air quality, the department did a presentation when we met. The station that are monitored by the weather service, they actually meet the standards. And those that are not managed by the weather service are below the standard. And one of our initiatives as the weather service is to work very closely with the municipality to assist and train them in monitoring and managing their own monitoring station, because we want to have the quality, the raise the quality of the data that is required. This is the example of one of the automatic weather stations that we have come up with, the one that I was talking about, that has got camera. The municipalities, they also, and the disaster management, when they're flooding or whatever, they are in a position to say, we need to close that road immediately. And when it comes to ports, those are some of the products that we are coming up with. And that infrastructure, I would like to expand it and make sure that the municipalities have got that kind of infrastructure to assist them in managing their disaster management. With business optimization, the quality management system, I've spoken about it, and it's one of the areas that we're also assisting. The other area, members, that is also require resources and funding is business continuity. Because you also need to have a duplicate of what they are doing somewhere else. Just in case, let's say, the head office caught fire, people will still need the information to fly. And it's just severe with us. So we also have the PCT plan, a business continuity plan in place. And that also requires resources to do that and meeting the same quality that is required. One of the areas that we felt that is we don't have enough people is around the human capital. We looked at that for the organization, and the board managed to provide us with funds. In the past, we used to have people who are leaving at a rate of 20s, but now it's a shift in terms of the scientists. So the initiatives around retaining the dual career pathing. However, one of the things that is also, we also started to have started a collaboration with institutions. Like all of them, we're in understanding why some of their pass rate is very low. And that has made a lot of improvements. More of these people, they tend to finish their degrees and join the organization. We also look at one of the important programs. We went to the different academic institutions, like the University of Pretoria, Wits University, UCT, University of Rotterdam, University of Zululand, and a number of them, to say there are skills that are required by the country to deal with some of the challenges. And we need to be coming up with training that is responding to that. And out of that, we have developed a plan that we are trying to source funds from all over. And we need to ensure that we also have to form up the municipalities to say how many of the air quality people that you need, how many of the focusers that you need, so that are able to deal with disaster management. So there is that project that we are trying to get funds. And specifically one area, members, that the country is needs to develop skills around hydrometeorology and agrometeorology and air quality, where you've got deep understanding of agriculture and weather and climate issues. Coming to the challenges, the minister indicated as well that we have been having challenges over some time because of the economic crisis. As an organization, we looked at what needs to be done in terms of the mandate, then we come up with a budget. And if you look over the years, that if you start from 2012, there have been a drastic increase from what is required to do the work to meet the mandate and what we receive at the end. And that is a challenge in maintaining a good infrastructure and also human capital. Next one. One of also the challenges is that in 2005, the government grant for the operational grant to deal with the mandate, the operational issues and the mandate, it was that the contribution was 63%, and it has gone down to 55%. And in terms of the mandate and the things that needs to be done, when you do the APD costing, it's far more than that. As demonstrated there, in 2013-14, the budget was actually the operational grants from our government. We could only pay for human capital, for people, for salaries, nothing else. That is one of the areas that is also a challenge. Whereas now what it means is that we might depend on commercial, and sometimes you don't do well on commercial, but you need to be making sure that the public good is also delivered the service. If you look at how we've tried to manage over the years to maintain the employee cost in terms of the total cost to be less than 50% of our cost, we've tried to maintain that. The question is, what is the impact of this budget constraint? Number one, whether does this is an essential service. We need to provide the service 24/7, 365 days. If we continue to cut, that is one of the areas that we will not be able to provide the service 24/7. The repair and maintenance, I'm going to talk about that, because most of our money goes to infrastructure. Servicing of provision of commercial clients. For example, now one of the challenges that we have with our customers, they want the data information that is actually accurate. And if the data availability is less than 80%, that is our level agreement with them, then we will get penalized, or they will try and find something else to get that information. And find that some of our advisors now say that is less than that. Knowledge generation is one of the areas that we have a problem. Also provision of aviation information as well is one of the areas. One of the areas that I cannot go to sleep at night is the data quality, if we don't have that necessary infrastructure. And in totality, looking at the work that we do at an international level, is also a reputational risk for the country in meeting our obligations at a national and international level. I want to talk specifically about the challenge that is keeping our board members and all of us
at the moment, with the infrastructure that we have, and the budget that after the cut.
Just a minute. The slide that you have just passed, I was looking for it. Now, including this one that you are going to, I'm looking for it. Rest assured, we don't have that. Any slide that is almost in the mold of the slide that you have passed, the one that talk about stakeholder something. But on the one that you have passed, just make it available to us.
Okay, thank you. Listen to this lecture, the maintenance budget. The maintenance budget for the infrastructure is the key burning issue at the moment. We've got, after the budget cut, we looked where we can reduce and see whether we cannot get funds. The maintenance budget was also cut. We're supposed to have a minimum of 10 million to do that work. And at the moment, we've got a shortfall of 7 million rands. And what this has resulted into, if we can go to the next slide, is the fact that if you look at our radar data availability, it has actually gone down. There are areas, some of the radars that we cannot actually provide the minimum required standard because those radars do not have the required equipment to replace. And also the other thing is that we also have a problem with the backup that is required for each radar. We have a backup system when there is no electricity, where we can still provide the service 24 hours. It's one of the challenges that we have at this moment that we are trying to deal with. And it has got an impact in terms of the quality of the information that we are going to provide for the various residents and also for commercial as well. That is the detail of the challenges that we have with those different radars. So one of the things with the radars is that the equipment that is needed to replace them is actually very expensive, and you need to source it outside South Africa, and you also need to have guarantees in terms of payment upfront. So now the challenge is for us to commit to knowing that we're not having the necessary funds to do that. We have realized that, Chairperson, there are still a lot of opportunities that are there. We felt that it was important for us to manage our stakeholders very closely. I've spoken about some of the infrastructure that we manufacture internally. We are having engagements with the municipalities to ensure that we can provide that infrastructure and assist them and make sure that we get the quality of data, and then maybe they can also budget for the necessary infrastructure for their disaster management. There are a number of partners for commercials that we've identified for to commercialize our products, and also the balancing effect of commercialization with the public good. These are our key stakeholders that we are looking at. And these are the new emerging opportunities that we are also looking at as well. Where, for example, with the green economy, with the information that we have and the knowledge to assist these new companies that are coming in to set up farms here, wind farms and the solar energy, there is some work that's being done there. With the resource liberalization and commercialization as indicated, this is one area that planning and risk management for commercial industries and with sensitive industries, we are trying to come up with platforms that make sure that they get the information. So, when we managed to, I've talked about the Union Capital management, where we are looking at coming up with a broader strategy for the development of the competence that are needed. We had discussion as well with the Department of Higher Education. In conclusion, Chair, for us to be successful and continue to do the good work that the organization is doing for the country, for Africa and at an international level, the issue of resource mobilization, we are looking at it very closely, starting with the funding from the shareholder and also commercialization. We need to continue to invest in infrastructure and human capital. And the other area is to look at strong collaboration with the other institutions as well. Our strategy, Chair and Honourable Members, is geared towards long-term sustainability of the water service and supporting the government priorities and also long-term sustainability of the economic growth of the country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Members. Maybe we should engage with this presentation before we go to the next one. Any issue that you like to raise in this area? Maybe I should be the first one. Let me raise the issue that is in our report. In our report, when we were dealing with the budget process, we said the department working together with yourselves and the Treasury must look into the negative impacts of the cuts, financial cuts. We even went to town to explain what the implications are, which we have explained now. What we want to know, obviously, would be what has been done to take that process forward. Because I think in this presentation, one area that I believe made all of us uncomfortable is that if the cuts remain, they will impact on your ability to do your work. This is what we have then asked the department working with you and Treasury to look at. Our colleagues having any other issues so that we just put the issues and then we get the response. Any other person wants to speak to me?
I did send an apology. I hope this is... I'm just fascinated by this idea that we are able to predict weather behavior and especially floods and these sort of things. And we tell farmers to move equipment. But you know, I see that every year in Johannesburg, in particular in the townships of Western Cape, we have floods. Sometimes people die. So I'm just wondering, this is not something that is available to these communities, which for, of course, socioeconomic reasons are quite exposed. Shouldn't we be considering this possibility for them?
That is Honourable Member Andy Lembritam. I'm introducing him because he did not have the opportunity to introduce himself. Bob Mabil.
Rather that he has covered me with regard to the first question, but I'm totally fascinated and impressed about the good work that you are doing, especially in Africa, and the technology and the capacity and the expertise that you have. I wonder how many people know that. It was important. It's not a question, it's just a rhetorical question for myself. To say that something as good as this must really find a way of getting to the public so that they must appreciate what you are doing to the rest of Africa, especially your innovation. Now, what I did not keep up, Honorable Chair, is that they are experiencing what this country has experienced, that nurses have deposed from this country to Saudi Arabia and many other countries. They are reporting that there are 10 scientists been attracted as well. What I've merged is that there's no retention strategy. I've merged that. Did you mention it? Okay. Because it was going to be a concern for me. Secondly, the last one will be around the stress skills. I regard these as stress skills. The hydro, water, the agro, and air quality. What I want to check, to what extent do we accept students from rural areas to be tested in these stress skills? I know this is in-house, is your human resource strategy for your staff, but looking out by having a program, a source that will attract especially students who have passed well with math and science to follow these careers. Are you having a career to be seen? Those are the questions that the chair is currently with, of course.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Astana.
Thank you, sir. We know that this program has challenges, and we know that your funding has been severely cut, 40 million rand over the next 2 years. But there was a comment that the minister made, not in this committee, but in a previous one, where she said, yes, the funding has been cut, but you know the reasons why. So were there any shortcomings within your department that perhaps could have caused Treasury to say, okay, well, this is the area that we think, you know, needs to be cut? And if so, what are you doing to rectify those things so that if we are going to fight for more funding for your program, then we can do it with security? Thank you.
Who starts? DG, are you starting with the bigger question?
Yes, honorable members, honorable chair. The minister, if she was leaving, said I must convey her message in respect of this issue. One, there is a budget process that is being followed. We are unable to get a response before that process is followed because, one, we submitted the motivation for what is referred to as unavoidable. What is it? I expected an unavoidable expenditure, and the Treasury committees are going to be meeting in the next 2 weeks or so. Again, even with that, she is saying that she is aware that in Cabinet, there is the issue of a challenge. We have to defend everything that we have, even on the baseline. We are not guaranteed that we are going to have the budget that we have currently as all departments. So last week we were called as DGs by the National Treasurer, and such a presentation was made that we are not, even with what we've been given in the MTF, in the current financial environment, it is highly possible that we may not get even what we have because the budget envelope, we already exceeded our expenditure ceiling. So they are looking at us giving up some of the area, in some of the areas, as a result in the department, if you remember, honorable members, we said that they are not even filling our posts. We've stopped because even ourselves we're not funded to that extent. So the response from the minister is that it is uncertain. We currently do not know until there is a decision in Cabinet when the Minister of Finance presents the situation after all the submissions have been made by Department. So it does seem unlikely. So I think the message that the Minister was saying to us is that we need to find a way to manage within what we have. We know that we have more demands, but it is a fact that we are in a different financial climate. So that is the response that I can give on the behalf of the minister. Thanks.
Yes, Professor.
Thank you, Chair. I think looking at the first question on floods, yes, we do have the challenge where you find that a community, especially in areas that are dense, you might also have people that are dying. From our side as the Weather Service, we work very closely with the disaster management and provide the necessary information. And in working with them, they also provide the warnings and the necessary support to those communities. But I think one of the areas that we felt we can even go further in assisting, where it's one of the areas probably in the future, we can be used as the technology. Our researchers have come up with a community rain gauge where you can connect it to your cell phone. When there is a lot of rain that is coming, you are able to know early enough so that you can move your property out of that area. One of the initiatives at the organization is to start to talk to the cell phone service providers to see whether they cannot look at this as a program we can work together using the technology that we have and making sure that people, because even every, a lot of people have got cell phones, so we can look at that possibility. Coming to the other issue in terms of training of scientists, the Weather Service, over some time, we had a lot of scientists that were leaving. There was a time in the 2008-2009 where our people that turn over rate was around 28% scientists leaving. And there was a strategy that was developed, a retention and a talent management strategy, where we've got dual career pathway. Well, some of the scientists don't want to be managers, but they want to get a better pay and doing good work. So there is that. As a scientist, if you have a PhD and you are doing key projects in terms of science and innovation, you can move up the ladder but still be a scientist. That has worked very well. The other one, we have identified the steps and the critical skills. For 2 years, we provided to identify experts within the organization and people that they can shadow for a 2 year period. And we paid them the critical skills allowance. And after that program, the experts within the organization, when we're finalizing the program, said they would like to continue with the program without even getting any allowance for it, because it's also fulfilling. And we managed to retain people to the point that now we have 80%. We also have a bursary program where on a basis we provide bursaries to 80 candidates. And the strategy is that it's the previously disadvantaged. 2/3 of that is the previously disadvantaged, and also making sure that we get a 50-50 when it comes to also women in the area. And over the period, we have been employing almost all of them at the Weather Service when they finish school. It's only in the last 2 years where we've resolved 68% of those that pass. So that program works very well. And we make sure that we go to the rural areas. We also have career days where we invite scholars to come to the Weather Service. But also what we are doing, we are working with the other academic institutions and other institutions where they invite us to also go and present. We've got offices throughout South Africa. So each province, each region, regional office, they've got one of their projects to do that. We appointed liaison officers to start liaising with the communities. So that work is also being done. The one area that I think members will also agree, maybe we do not market the activities of the organization and also of the country. I think I must also thank the government of South Africa, as indicated. When we looked at that infrastructure, South Africa is one of the best countries in the world in terms of the infrastructure. There is investment that is being done. We also appreciate that. We also appreciate the challenges that have been. Like the slides where I was showing the infrastructure, the lightning detection network. We have invested a lot in that. And a number of countries in the continent, they don't have. If you look at the radar network is very expensive, but we do have that as a country, and it's covering most of the country. I mean, a few years ago, the country provided the organization with $240 million to have that infrastructure. So there is a lot of good work that the country is doing. Coming to the question that you've raised around what is it that you are doing when it comes to the issue of budget. We have one of our initiatives looking at the resource mobilization. I will also agree with you that we also hold with the budget process. We have resubmitted some of the requirements that we need. However, we've moved beyond that and saying priority is to also have strong collaboration with other institutions. For example, if we are talking about human capital development and having the pool of agrometeorologists, we need to talk to maybe the Department of Higher Education and see whether they cannot look at funding. Hence, we started talking to universities so that we can work together to see how we can resource those funds. But sometimes it's not the money itself, but it's the expertise that are required. So you might find other departments there, they also have some funds, or other institutions. And we are also planning to go to the private sector and identify some of those where the sensitive industry to embrace these initiatives and see whether we cannot have co-funding with them. So we are looking at other initiatives that we can work with. And looking at the municipalities, they need expertise on air quality, they need expertise on interpreting the weather information, they need liaison officers that can work with communities. So in terms of we might have a liaison officer based at the municipality, but also assisting us to do the work. So we are looking at different ways of addressing those challenges. I think I've answered all the questions.
Thank you very much. I just hope that there is tea outside there. Or if there is no tea, there must be water. Can you just take a 5 minute break so that we then come back and then get the presentation from Sunday? Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Lots of meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How many
commissions
do you cover?
So we try to cover all.
Yeah.
We try to get
a
monitor.
How
on.
Many
deputy are you in there? Oh, me? Yeah. Basically, the one environmental it is and water.
Oh.
Water or police.
Oh.
Depending on the subject. Yeah.
So that means you are here from Tuesday to Wednesday?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Thank you, colleagues, and honorable members. Let's now welcome the team from the South African National Biodiversity Institute to speak to us on what they do. By the way, this is the first interaction with yourselves, as you will know. That's why we have not dwelt into matters that might be related to your performance last year, because we will have that opportunity. We will have that opportunity. For now, it's just getting to know you and what you do. And of course, you can raise any issues that you are of concern to yourselves. But we will interact with you on your annual performance. There will be that opportunity. But more importantly, from where we are seated, we'll interact with you in your domain, where you originally work or where you are expected to work, where you will take us around areas of your actual work, so that we don't only know about your work from these boardrooms. We must know about your work from your actual work. So we will come the rest of this year, not next year. This year we will come and see what you do and where. And so that practical visitation complements this theory that we are getting here. With those words, may we then, oh, let's welcome Member Maluleka. Now, I don't know where she comes from, but she is normally never late. I think something happened, something terrible happened. But you are most welcome, Honorable Member. I'm told that the South African National Biodiversity Institute is led by the CEO, Dr. Abrams, who will then make the presentation. Is it Abrams or Abrams?
Abrams.
Abrams, okay. Yeah, thank you very much.
The SE part is because of my slave heritage. the servant of Abrams. That's a very old name. So thank you very much, and it's an honor, and thank you very much for inviting me to this, and it's really great that we're able to engage with the portfolio committee, and I'm sure it will be a constructive engagement. My name is Tanya Arms, as I mentioned before, and in my grouping here, my colleagues will also answer questions if necessary. Connell and Diesel, she will answer any questions around research and any of the work we do on policy and knowledge management. And Mr. Buckley is the chief corporate officer, and anything you've got about corporate affairs. We're also glad to have our board secretary, Ms. Lebogang Radipele, and anything around governance and the board and other corporate matters she can answer. And then Mr. Smith, who is our finance director, and as I indicated, our CFO is on leave. We want to, and you got the presentation. I just want to say that there's just a very slight error under program 3. When we get there, I will tell you. We just the secretary just made a swap, and so that I'll point it out. I wanted to just take you, as requested, a little background of SANDI, the South African National Biodiversity Institute, and some key information for you, and then to give you the legislative and policy and mandate and reporting context. Just to catch you up. And then because our mandate is so broad and wide, I wanted to really just succinctly tell you about our role.
We have a parliamentary team at 2.
Oh, okay.
Which then simply means that if we are not done by 1:30, then we might leave you alone. So if all of us can just observe that this time constraints. Yeah.
No, not for sure. I see that you've noted my propensity to talk too much, but I shall try and put as much information in the short time that you've given me here. Okay. So then we're going to talk about the programs that support our mandate and our role with the medium term strategic framework as part of the state's infrastructure. And then talk about our high-level structure, just for your information. And I really want to focus on some of the outputs in our programs and want to focus on our contribution to the socioeconomic transformation agenda of South Africa, because sometimes one doesn't see the link between biodiversity science and actually the socioeconomic goals of our country as a developmental state. And then I want to talk about challenges, and then we don't have any envisaged legislation, as you asked if we were. We're not a legislative institution. We rely on our department on that, and so that's the contents, and I probably will have time to go through it all. The vision, mission and goals often seem to be a simple matter, but we thought very long and hard about this. Our vision is biodiversity regions for all South Africans, and the reason why is that biodiversity and conservation historically with South Africa has got a legacy issue like many other things in South Africa. And so one of the major aims we must therefore have is to ensure that we are inclusively trying to either engage or empower or to make benefit of all South Africans. And so that was a thought-out vision. And our mission is to champion and explore conservation, sustainable use, and appreciation of our very rich biodiversity for all people. If you are the third most mega-diverse country in the world, surely you should be looking at taking that asset to improve our people's lives and to grow our economy and society. And so our goal would be to position SANDI to lead the biodiversity sector of South Africa, and that we are recognized as the first port of call for information and policy advice on biodiversity. Just a little bit of key information here. We're a Schedule 3A public entity, a public good entity. We report to TIER,
And what often is not known is that we used to be an organization called the National Botanical Institute in before NEMBA 2004, which was essentially an institution that ran national botanical gardens and focused on plants. And when the NEMBA was passed, we have had to go on the path of also focusing on animals as well as plants. And so we not only focus on species work, but also ecosystem work and other work, the link between biodiversity and people. So quite a broadening of the mandate with the NEMBA 2004. In addition, of course, NEMBA 2004 is not very specific if you read it. And so how you craft your mandate from the non-specificity of the NEMBA Act has been a real challenge. We are sworn under the Minister of Environment, and our board is the accounting authority. It's appointed by Cabinet with the Minister's recommendation. We are subject to the PFMA and other Treasury regulations, including the Auditor General. And then, oddly enough, we are not subject to the public service regulations. And the major differentiator between for this is the fact that we've got our own pension fund. It's a historic institution. The pension fund, which is a legal entity separate from SANVI, but it's a pension fund nevertheless, and so we are not part of the public pension fund of the public service. A number of shops spread over the country is about 750. Most of them are Biden staff. And now, of course, we also, in addition to that, which I'll talk about, we have an unusual situation where we've employed 818 young Kroonsebenza pioneers. And this is a program I'll tell you a little bit about our attempt to build a cadre of young people who are going to come and lead our sector going into the future. We are located in 9 natural botanical gardens. We are going towards 11 of them, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. And for us, it's also a challenge, but very exciting indeed. And when we have those 11 natural botanical gardens, SANVI will truly have a national footprint. Previous, I think that we were a little bit toward the south and to the west, and now we'll have a national footprint. And our head office is in Pretoria. So our legal policy and legal framework of the sources of our mandate, of course, is NEMBA, and it is gazetted. We also, underneath the NEMBA Act, there are regulations, and obviously in the threatened and protected species area, in the CITES and the National Scientific Authority work that we do, and just recently quite elaborate and new regulations around alien invasive species, which has given SANVI quite a lot of work to do in the assessment and understanding of our invasive species area. You might note, invasive species is turning out to be one of the biggest threats on biodiversity and water security for our part of the world, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. We have obligations also which have been gazetted in the National Biodiversity Framework, which is the 5-year plan approved or taken out of the 20-year vision, which is God's grant to Cabinet, the National Biodiversity Strategic Action Plan. So that's been gazetted, and we've got particular obligations in that. We also have obligations in the Minister's Delivery Agreement. It used to be our campaign, now with the MTSS targets. And just also recently, in the last year or so, our name is mentioned in the Climate Change Response White Paper, and we are designated a role to deliver long-term adaptation scenarios for the bio and natural resources in a scenario of climate change. So just very quickly just to tell you that we put everything in a CSP, in a Corporate Strategic Plan, and we have Annual Performance Plan, which is a tool to organize and manage what is a very broad mandate. And these plans are approved by our board, and they are approved by DEA and submitted to the presidency and yourselves. And we progress report done quarterly, and we analyze, and it's analyzed by DEA. And the targets in the APB are audited by the AG. And just to say, Chair, that we really have got a very good system here of really trying to service DEA and its needs in terms of science for good policy making, and that's what I think the reason why we're such a good turnaround around quarterly reporting and analyzing our CSP. And just to say, I have a popular version of a corporate strategy plan I'm giving you. We give this to all our staff because our mandate is quite complex. We want all our staff to understand that we're not just gardens, we're not just research, we're not just education, but we're all of those. And so I've given you a copy of this pocket corporate strategy plan 2014-19. Okay. The next is just to tell you very briefly, because sometimes we are seen at different angles. So the first thing that you might know us as is the agency that manages the National Botanical Gardens Network. At the minute we're 9, we're going on 11. I've also given you a little pack, which is called South Africa's 9 National Botanical Gardens. So I won't have to go through and tell you all the names. But I think for you, you might famously know the Kirstenbosch Garden. But we also have other very, very beautiful gardens. And we are moving towards 11. Kwelecha Nature Reserve has just been declared a National Botanical Garden under us by the Minister. That will be the 10th garden. So in fact, we are 10 at this moment in time. And then we are hoping to take over Toyando Garden in Limpopo. I think I put it on your desk. So the garden, and we are known as the gardens and the management of that network and the conservationist management all over the country and is a really important thing for Sandy. The science we do in the National Botanical Gardens feeds our science that we take. So the next important area that we work on is the scientific research. So we monitor and report on the state of biodiversity and we provide science-based evidence for deer to make sound policy decision making. And so we are really obligated to take quite complicated science, including foundational science, species science, ecosystem science, and really collate it and put it into a form, I hate to say this, that public servants can understand. So it's a language between the scientists and public servants. So we play that role in between. The much of the research here is not actually done by us. We, over years, have found that actually we should be harnessing the capacities of our science institutions in the country, universities, academic institutions, and other institutions, and harnessing them towards providing veritable data for us to put it into a science, into policy tool for our department, but not only our department, DST, Water Affairs, municipalities, provinces, and other institutions to make sound decisions. And we call that the managed network. What we also do in our act is we coordinate and provide access to biodiversity information and scientific knowledge. And really, I would really encourage our colleagues to go into our website and to click onto a thing called Biodiversity Advisor. And in that, you will see the array of information we're able to give you, right down to cadastral level. So if you're a homeowner, for example, or a farmer, or a person who wants to create a new development in an area, you should be able to go onto our website and right down to cadastral level tell you what is the water situation there, what's the soil situation there, and if there are any threatened species there. So we think that that kind of information majorly cuts the cost of business for the economy. Because, you know, if there's different species or it's not possible for you to build in that area, you know very early on and you don't spend money doing a lot of EIAs and stuff. So that's what our aim there. And we have been also working with universities, et cetera, to create that biodiversity information. It would be really good if we could go in and give us your opinion about how useful you find that information. But year two, we really want to both feed Professor Matebuko and Mrs. Tutoi in the whole line. We want them all from that whole value chain to actually go in and find that information useful. So I'm sure as members of Parliament, you would really find this to be useful and need to give us feedback. Then the fourth thing that we do is to provide science-based policy tools and advice for effective management of biodiversity assets and ecological infrastructure. And I suppose the one in this last year that might pique your interest is that of all the science and information we collated, we were able to provide a thing called Biodiversity and Mining Guidelines, and we worked together with the Chamber of Mines and the Department of Mineral Resources to produce a very simple tool for water affairs and mineral resources to know where there are total no-go areas for mining. And we launched it this year, and both Minister of Environment and the Minister of Mineral Resources co-signed it. And I think our Minister of Environment wants to eventually make it into more firmer than just a guideline, because it's really all the science behind it. And then finally, I think that I need to point out that we have the obligation in the National Biodiversity Framework to drive human capital development in our sector. Not only education awareness, you see school children in our gardens and stuff like that, but really to have a 360 view about what are the human capital development challenges in our sector and lead it. And I'll tell you a little bit about this. And this is how we support PIA to achieve the MTSF goals and targets for the environmental sector. Next high-level structure, I think you can just look at that. I think that, you know, in trying to, next slide please, in trying to visualize and to communicate to our, to the citizens, to yourselves, and to the public of South Africa, what it is we do and how we link with the broader objectives of the country, this is what we call, we hope, is a one-shot look for you to see all the things that we do and see the link between our growth and development goals as well as the work that we do. So at the foundation of the work we do all the collections and the taxonomy and the inventory and the mapping, the classifications of ecosystems and species for the country, foundation research. And that's a lot of scientists and a lot of working with other institutions. Out of that information, we build on that knowledge by taking that information and therefore give you assessments of the state of our biodiversity, tell you about the status of different species or ecosystems. We talk about trends, so that's why I can be very clear about saying that invasive species, for example, is becoming the biggest threat to biodiversity, and so that's a big trend. We monitor the state of biodiversity and advise the minister. We also provide modeling both for diversity and climate change. So that's taking all the information and putting it into an analyzable tool. And then out of that, we really, as I mentioned earlier, want to take that science and give our Department of DEA as well as other departments information and policy advice and models and tools that will make it easy for them to make good decisions about water use licenses or mining licenses or etc. And out of that, we think and hope that we influence human well-being in our country and we improve service delivery and job creation. Because we feel we need to honor biodiversity by being the third most megadiverse country in the world. Why would we not? We want to show our investment in ecological infrastructure. In other words, fixing up rather than building is a good approach. We want to look at what's happening with climate change and how it's going to affect our biodiversity and therefore the knock-on effect on human well-being. And we want to streamline or help streamline environmental decision-making. Because I think that when environmental decision-making is onerous for developers, then they will, they'll bypass it, they'll break the law, etc., etc. So it's a real aim that we would want to do that. So we, next slide please, we divide our programs into six programs. I won't go into detail, but go next. I'll tell you about it next. So program one, as set out as National Treasury wishes us to be, is really about our effective and efficient corporate services. Next slide please. And we want to be position ourselves as an employer of choice. And it was interesting talking about the weather services. We discovered that our science career, our scientists who are very, very productive, that in the system that we had, there was no way of not remunerating them, but incentivizing them to stay or having a retention to retain them. And scientists, African scientists on the African continent in particular, are really wanted globally because of the global lack of scientists. And so we've created a thing called the Scientist Career Ladder, and that's been a really interesting exercise. And it's quite innovative. We're going to patent this because it's quite innovative, actually. But it's really fit for purpose for Cindy. And we're finding already that our scientists are becoming much more productive as a result. The other area is our horticultural career path. You might be interested, Chair, is that Kew Gardens, which is a famous garden, Royal Kew in the UK, have asked us whether they can use this horticultural career path because they never thought about it before, which is all the senior people that work in our garden. And we said yes first before realizing we could have actually patented it. But nevertheless, it's good for relationships with other botanical gardens. And that's the only thing we've asked is that it be called the South African Horticultural Career Path. So that's some of the work that we're doing around retaining and us becoming an employer of choice.
The other area that we want to really grow is our own staff, and we set a target of 1% of our payroll allocated on staff development. You must grow your own timber. It's very difficult to find people with those kind of experiences just lying out there. And then the issue of our employment equity targets is also very important for us, given the history of biodiversity conservation in South Africa. Next up, please. The next one is about finance and compliance. And as you will see, our target of having unqualified orders, which this year we had, and that we would manage risks well, and that we would be compliant with the San Media protocol. Next slide, please. This area, Chair, is really important for us, and it was interesting that one of your colleagues made a comment about communication, etc., etc. ICT, unlike with SOAS, is not as important. I was just listening to Dr. McAvaney's presentation. But it has become increasingly important, especially for access to information that is useful for decision making. So we've got some ICT targets there, and marketing and communication, of course, about the services that we deliver. Just in this last year, we've really ratcheted up, and we've had a number of marketing efforts. So I gave you some marketing tools that we produce. This one is a seed of an indigenous plant inside. Please don't take it out of the country, or it will become an invasive species in another country. But in South Africa, you can use this and plant it, and it's a compliment to you. And then the other marketing, I told you about the garden and our corporate strategy, and I've got some other stuff which we'll talk about. Next slide, please. Okay. Given the extent of the fact that we are actually situated now in 11 places and staff are quite scattered, one of the key areas is internal communication, and we have a number of tools to communicate internally with our colleagues, as well as issues around access to internet for even the lowest levels of workers in our organization, in languages that we want, because we have all 11 languages, I think, in Zambia. And we want, the aim of a lot of internal communication is to build a family that is truly one and not just led by management or by the leadership of the organization. And it's a journey, but we are very adamant that that's what we want, given how scattered we are. The next slide of this around our employment equity, for you to just see. Program 2. That was all corporate services. Next slide, please. So here we go. Program 2 is to manage and unlock benefits of the National Botanical Gardens Network. And here is a picture of all our gardens across the whole country, but it doesn't include the two gardens that are coming on stream. Next slide, please. We were very, very lucky indeed to have made a bid for increased infrastructure funding last year. And so the first tranche of infrastructure funding came in last year, and so we have a number of maintenance projects in the garden that will really improve our facilities right around the country. For example, we are in many of our gardens at the minute we have education centers, but in others we don't have. We're creating, building education centers in most of our gardens that didn't have. We're improving old buildings that were actually probably didn't qualify for health and safety, which we're building in both Bloemfontein and in Kirstenbosch. And so this has really given us a great opportunity to do this. But I wanted to say that we also have a public-private partnership with BOTSOF, the Botanical Society of South Africa, and they have membership, and they give us money as well for projects. And it's a really good tool for engaging citizens, is our relationship with BOTSOF. So when we agree on an annual plan, on the money they've collected, and what we are going to do, we don't allow them to build without us agreeing, and then we do it together with them. And so I think the gardens will look really great between private money that we get by WhatsApp and the massive injection of public money we got for infrastructure last year. I think the gardens are going to look great. Next, please. Then, of course, the next
specific area is our two new national botanical gardens established and developed, one in the Eastern Cape and one in the Limpopo province. It's the first time a new garden has been declared since 2007. Kwelepa Nature Reserve is quite an undeveloped garden. It's just a piece of land, but it does cover very unique coastal flora, which nowhere else is protected, and there's some of the dunes along that coast. And so in the 10 kilometers north of East London, and we're really looking forward to working with the Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism Board to build a very good National Botanical Garden. In the Popo Province, the Toyando Garden is already an established garden, but a bit neglected, with very little money going in there over the last 20 years since the vendor, a homeland, didn't exist. So this is also, we're very looking forward to working with the Popo Province, with Ladette, around making this really a great garden. In a way, you can travel past that garden on your way to the top page of Kruger, and we want to make sure that people see it and get used to it. So it's quite a nice project. Also, we'll be great for that area to have a relationship in Limpopo, which has quite unusual vegetation and very unusual biomes, which is not captured in any of our other gardens at the minute. We also have a target around indigenous plants. We are part of the Millennium Seed Bank. We're one of the performing institutions in the Millennium Seed Bank globally. And so we are part of a global effort of collecting indigenous seeds to put into a seed bank that is the UK government have put quite a lot of investment in it, so that when if a disaster does strike, that we can actually resuscitate species that might be destroyed in some kind of disaster situation. Then finally, the objective around gardening is about generating activities, revenue generating activities. We had a 100-year, Kinabosh 100-year celebration this past year, and all the activities and the ratcheted up communication has meant that actually we had quite an increase in footfall through the gates. In not only in Kirstenbosch, but because it was Kirstenbosch 100th birthday, other gardens also benefited from that increased football. So you will see when we come to you that we've got higher than forecasted income from increase from football through the gate. And it really is like a chicken and egg. You need to invest more in marketing. And when you've got no money, you reduce marketing, and then you have a knock-on effect. And I think we're just coming out of that chair. So pattern three. Next slide, please. And yeah, I just wanted to show you a little bit of some of the work that we have done. I also have on my desk here quite a few of other documents and other, which you're very welcome to see, around providing scientific evidence to support policy and decision making. And yeah, we have a climate change role as well, as I mentioned, being the climate change policy. And it's in strategic objective 3.1, and 3.1 that there's a little swap, I'm afraid, of the figures. So, yeah. So, just to tell you, you'll see a bit of change, but I wasn't going to go into that much detail. The one that's going, the document that you just got, is we fixed that. So I think it was just a swap. But, yeah, under strategic objective 3.1 is to provide foundational information on species and ecosystems. And global chair, people don't like foundational research anymore. Everybody wants to be at the higher up that value chain and being on the analytical side. But the problem is if you neglect the foundational information, if you neglect doing just the boring taxonomy and inventories of understanding what makes up biodiversity of a country, etc., you cannot do good analysis further down the chain. So we're very lucky indeed, apart from the dear support to us, in general for operations. We're very lucky to have a relationship with DST, and the Department of Science and Technology has an obligation to do some of this foundational information. We do it on their behalf, and they fund us to do it. And so with the results, we not only have a very comprehensive plant species inventories, and we keep up the taxonomy and classification, but over the last 10 years of the existence of SAMBI, we've ratcheted up our ability to do animal taxonomy. And I have a number of publications here that you're very welcome to see, or you can go onto our website. But we have done things like the inventory on reptiles and a whole array. And so this has been a catch-up 10 years on this. So the foundational information, which is really strategic objective 3.1, is really key. And in terms of biodiversity and biology and ecosystems and the environment, the green environment, SANBI is a leader in this, not only in South Africa, but I think on the continent. Okay, then the next strategic objective, can you go to the next slide? And here is us providing scientific evidence on the status of biodiversity and the risks and benefits to inform policy and decision making. And we're quite a prolific paper producer. And what's important about being about publishing in the science world is that your paper, when you publish, is peer reviewed, and so you are the questions are asked globally about the veracity of your information, etc., etc. So when you get a publication in an international paper, for example, then you know that you are leading in the field. In the last 2 years, we have got some major papers in major publications like Nature, etc., etc. We also, if you look at the Member Act, you'll see that we are the secretariat of the scientific authority. At the minute, we also chair it, but that can rotate. But we are the secretariat of the scientific authority. The scientific authority's role, that the scientific authority is made up of officials from provinces as well as here, and the scientific authority is the word about how do we deal with species in trade, threatened species that cannot be traded, etc. So we are the secretariat of that. Then I talked a little bit before about the access to biodiversity information and science knowledge, huge amount of information there, but I really would like you all to go into the biodiversity advisor for you to see the spatial information. One of the very interesting meetings we must invite you to, Chair, and your colleagues, is the Biodiversity Information Management Forum that we run once a year. And here we invite all the planners and information people who have got information and knowledge in their system, and we talk about what's needed for the country. So we run that once a year, and that's very useful. But as you see, a lot of the targets here is around the Biodiversity Information the Biodiversity Advisor website. I just wanted to say, under this access to biodiversity data and information, we're just not maybe so explicit in me going through the targets here, Chair, is that we engage with an institution called the Global Biodiversity Information Facility, one of the leading players, and it's a global institution. And they asked us about 4 or 5 years ago to identify how we can help engage with the African continent. And of course, there are very, very excellent biodiversity institutions on the African continent. I'm sure you know places like Makerere University Science Institution there, etc. But one of the problems is they often don't have money. And we've been engaging with the African continent, and now Africa actually is leading in providing data into that Global Biodiversity Information Facility. Apart from the fact the humbling fact of engaging with scientists from Cameroon, Burkina Faso, Kenya, who managed to do a lot of work with very little money. So it's been a really two-way relationship with our continent, African continent, around biodiversity information. And Program 5 is really taking all that information and providing tools that is useful for decision makers. And I think the famous one we produced 2 or 3 years ago is the National Biodiversity Assessment. This year, though, okay, the OECD declared it to be the best practice globally. It is declared best practice in terms of how do you take veracible science information and produce it, put it into a system that is good for decision makers. So we're very proud of that, and we led it, but we also work together with the department on it. Then just to go back, sorry, I'm of trying to go as fast as possible. The drawback also is to say that we also have done, one of the few countries that have done the red listing process. Red listing is essentially the IUCN, the International Union of Conservation of Nature's system to list threatened species, and we have done the red list for all sub-African plants. We've got like 26,000 species, somebody correct me, and Brazil has got something like 40,000 species, and when we engage with Brazil, we have now sent people over to Brazil to help them do their red listing for plants, because we did it in a particular way that worked. Just to say also for your information, this is a summary of the National Biodiversity Assessment. We've distributed to schools. It's a very easy read. It gives you one eye look at the state of biodiversity and where we should be focusing our energies and efforts to protect biodiversity for future generations. And then just to show you a little bit about targets that we want to do. Next slide, please. Also, just to show you targets about under objective 5, some of the advice we give, etc. And in this area, that we will produce the mining and biodiversity guidelines, etc., etc. Okay. You can continue to. We can go to. I just want to point out under objective 5.4, just for your information, just to focus on climate impacts. Our role with the department and the division of labor around climate change, as I indicated, is for us to do work on the long-term adaptation scenarios for the country. So in other words, to say what do we need to change, both for the bio side of things, but also other side of things, what do we need to change in order to adapt to and survive and have resilience for what we predict is the climate change. And so while Dr. Makuleni predicts, we work in the area of saying, then what do you do? She says it's going to be two degrees higher by the year 2015, and we say, okay, let's work on how do we adapt to that, because there's an inevitability about climate change, and so adaptation is very important. We are the national implementing entity for the Global Adaptation Fund. Our minister asked us to do that, and our DG supported it. And it's a very exciting project. I don't want to go into too much detail, but we've got a major project in the Umgeni River Basin, right from one end, right from the Drakensberg foothills, right down to Ikekweni, looking at adaptation strategies. It's a huge population there, lot of chances of disasters. We're working with SOARS as well. SOARS, some of those devices that SOARS was mentioning, actually we're wanting to pilot and make sure in there. So we're having community disaster networks, etc., and really focus on that. Also in that NIE, we've got a project in the Namakwa area. As you know, Northern Cape, that part of the world, there's a prediction that it will be drier and hotter. And then we're also working in Marupani, which is where the area is going to be wetter and hotter, according to predictions about weather. And, of course, I can give more information about that. So Program 6 is really the area which we're very excited about. And I'm sorry I didn't put a slide in, and I also want to sit here and hold it up for you. But this is an area that is about sustainability of our sector. If we do not do this, I think Dr. McLennan also mentioned that, that if we don't do this human capital development, then there is an unsustainability in our sector. So we have worked really in three pillars. And let me start with the Green Matter pillar. We've got an engagement with the Lewis Foundation. They have funded us to look at what are the human capital development challenges in our sector, who are the players, what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong, why after 20 years we still don't have black scientists to the level that we would wish. And so this area has been very interesting with Lewis Foundation, which is quite an old funder of conservation, and it's been really an interesting journey with them, and they have funded us to not only think about it, but also have developed strategy and also the things we do in it. We have a bursary scheme there, there's fellowship, there's teacher development, career development, organizational development,
We're involved with the Skills Summit, Environmental Skills Summit. We've developed database tools for courses, and we also want to provide textbooks not only for high schools, but also for universities. And so it's been a really, really productive relationship with an independent foundation where we have the mandate and they have the money. And so that's really one of those really good relationships. Out of that, Chair, because of that that experience, we were able to go to the Jobs Fund and make a recommendation or make a proposal that we want to take our understanding of what is needed in the biodiversity sector and develop a program. And so this is a 300 million rand program that we got from the Jobs Fund. And essentially, it's to take some 300 matriculants and 500 graduates, approximately. But it's quite shocking that a country like ours has such high unemployment in the graduate level. And get together, because we could not absorb those people, obviously. The way to do it was to actually speak with other partners. And so we have 43 host partner institutions, which include other departments, other institutions, NGOs, the private sector. And this network of willing players who all have recognized that if we don't do this, our sector will not survive. And we've been now at it for a year and a half. And I must say, Chair, I'm sure my other colleagues would agree with me, that we seem to have picked the best of their generation. I have never met such enthusiastic people. One of the, and I can give you metrics, but I think it's too much detail, but we have slightly more women than men, just slightly. We don't want to discriminate against men. We have 80% are from rural areas. It was part of the Dog Fund conditionalities. And they're now a year and a half, and quite a few of them have developed the confidence and capabilities to go out into the workplace ready. We wish them to stay a bit so that they can build the skills up, but they already are fit for work, some of them. But this program is a 2.5 year kind of incubation period, and we're really seeing them gone. But they seem to have been the best of the bunch. I have never met such enthusiastic young people as in that. And then, of course, the other part of the circle is really more internal, and this is the work we're doing for our own development. And then we do, you might know us as having lots of children in gardens, and you've seen pictures, etc. But we still continue that, and we also still continue to have outreach to communities. So that other quarter is really the other side of human capital development. And obviously, we want to make an intervention in the sector in terms of human capital and skills that will last when we are all retired in this sector. So just to skip another, you must tell me when I'm running out here. Okay, it's only half past 12. All right. So next slide, please. I wanted to just, next slide. I'm going to go straight here. Yeah. I wanted to just say that often biodiversity is a very, very broad concept, quite a new concept actually. It's in the last 20 years that the concept of biodiversity, which is much broader than conservation, is much broader than nature, and encompasses an array of ideas. But it's more than plants, and it's more than animals and nature conservation. But it is conserving and using nature for human well-being in now and into the future. Because it's key that unless human beings and people see the value of biodiversity, then they're not going to protect it. So it's quite a complex concept. And then I never mentioned that we are the third most biodiverse country in the world. And it is natural capital with immense economic significance. And we need to do more to unleash that potential. It will be the source of the protection of it. As for example, the development of rural economies. I mean, I think that while we know, for example, our tourism is predicated on our nature, it's not the only thing that tourism sells, but it's predicated on our nature, our global tourism. And so that if we destroy that golden egg, then we won't get tourism, but that's just an example. There are many other elements that show how biodiversity and natural capital supports our economies.
So good management, biodiversity management, will slow down climate change. Good understanding, good analysis, and good management will slow down climate change and its impacts. So it's part of that chain. That ecosystem services such as grazing and pollination underpin our agricultural industry, that estuaries provide nurseries for many of our fisheries, wetlands purify water, and our tourism industry relies on natural infrastructure. So the links are very much there. So it's not just the tree-hugging community of South Africa, but actually has links to where we're going to in the future. We have done some work on looking at the value of ecosystem services with national tissue, and the estimate is that it's about 73 billion per annum. And then, as you might know, colleagues and honorable MPs, that when we agreed to go on the green economy path a few years ago and had a lot of thinking about it, and really we will not be able to take advantage of a green economy approach unless we have skilled people in the sector. But even on the unskilled level, there's potential for huge jobs. But obviously, we would like, want them to be skilled jobs. And that we think that investing in natural capital, in other words, rehabilitation, restoration, et cetera, is cheaper and easier than building dams and desilting estuary mounds, et cetera, et cetera. So we also, in that, it's really in that Ngazi River project, we're also doing a lot of economics of what does Itakwini municipality spend on purifying water when in fact they could use their money cheaper further up by ensuring that water goes to wetlands or goes to proper river. So it's quite an interesting thing. So the next slide, please. We also, in supporting government's socio-economic agenda, as well as in supporting the National Development Plan agenda, our role is to unlock that potential value. Our role is also to harness scientific capacity so that we use the taxpayers' money efficiently and effectively, and there's no disruptive competition between University of Cape Town and University of Stellenbosch, etc. We harness those capacities for the good of understanding biodiversity for the country. We have 9 gardens, going on 11. The National Botanical Gardens are not only windows for our unique biodiversity, but many of them, Chair, are in urban or peri-urban areas. So it's a place where urban and peri-urban people can have a look at our biodiversity, and so it's not only a place for education, it's also for recreation, religion, culture, and for tourism. And through our human capital development programs, we want to build the skills and capacities for decent jobs, and we want to work, we work in the science into policy interface, and all of that really has been set out in the NDP. The next slide is just about the jobs. We predict we will grow as part of government's topic. I want to quickly go through the key challenges. As you will know, we have a strategic infrastructure projects program. There's 19 of them. And they include issues like electricity power run out. I think they include roads and a whole lot of things. And I think all of us in the environmental family will be pressurized by the fact that there is the ships are great, but we will be pressurized to be providing very good information about weather services and ourselves in order for good decisions to be made in the ships, and we are involved in that. Ship 19, which is the one that's on ecological infrastructure, very interesting, innovative. We will have finance, but mainly human resource implications. The family is really about the skills that exist. And another challenge will be the implementation of the new invasive species regs and our responsibility in that. And that for the first time we're having 2 new gardens after 2007, and I think though we're very excited about it, I think it will require careful planning and allocation of human and financial resources for that to smoothly go. We don't have any legislation. I just want to go to the next slide. Just to say we have an unqualified audit.
We'll see you when we meet on that one, don't worry.
Okay. The rest is all about our revenue and expenditure, our predicted expenditure, just carry on, the one before. And I wanted to just also say that we have found here, although I think this might be a career-limiting move for me to say it, but we have found that we are able to leverage a lot of funding outside of the MTS from other departments, water affairs, DSC for example, but also from international funders. Now, as you know, Chair, the MTF money is the most reliable money. The rest are if you're lucky and have, but we have developed a reputation for good product delivery, and so, for example, the Global Environmental Fund did us to be in the top 4% of delivery projects for them globally. So, yes, we have got a reputation. So just in conclusion, I think I mentioned most of this. We leverage our funding from GS to get money from the private sector that we turned 100 years old the other day, new gardens, and this last time we just saw more visitors than we ever had. Next. Thank you.
What? Thank you very much, colleagues. There you are. We are now at 20 past 12. This matter is before you. You see, I'm a very democratic guy. The matter is now before you to engage with if there are any issues you want to engage with. These new envisaged botanical gardens. Okay, that's a shot by the statement that you said. You said that you were dealing with botanical gardens before. Now you got a new mandate that you must also look at other species that are not necessarily the species that you dealt with before, flowers and trees. So do we have some animals in the botanical gardens? Is the integration one? Two, what is the expectation in terms of job creation in the new gardens that you have alluded to? I think what Eastern Cape and the Pope, are we likely, of course we can learn from what you have now in the actual gardens themselves. Are there likely to be spin-offs in terms of employment? For people, you know why we are raising these matters. We are raising them because we have this problem. We have this problem in our country. In our quest to conserve and protect our environment, is there a possibility of jobs being created, particularly in the two areas? Colleagues, anything you want to raise? Let's start with this one. So as my colleagues are mulling over this presentation. We know, you see, you said so many things. Others were not here, you were editing. Okay, then.
The botanical gardens will always focus mainly on plants. And over the years, we also want to give refuge to threatened species and to plants that might be affected by climate change. So that in the end it's like a living collection, it's like a living bank of South Africa's plant species. But coincidentally, we do also have some animals, and we have insects and frogs and other reptiles, etc., of which some of our researchers have done work on the garden, and we've got, if you go to our website, you'll see we've done about the size of our garden, etc., etc., because we often are urban, peri-urban, green areas where these species would accumulate. But essentially, no, these are botanical gardens, and what we have done is harness the research capacity of other institutions to build up the South African inventory on some of those animal families. So, for example, which is the one I just launched the other day, the reptiles of Southern Africa. Reptiles of Southern Africa. Reptiles of Southern Africa. There was one of is a very, very prolific scientist here. We might have had one or two people in that, but we let it. We might have even got funding for it, but we would have talked with and engaged with Namibian scientists, botanists, and all our scientists in South Africa to develop a reptile of Southern Africa. And it's very, very great work, because you will for the first time see a footprint of all reptiles, their location, their species, etc., in the country. So that's the kind of thing we do. We don't need to have them in our garden, but we have zoologists on our staff who are scientists. And obviously we even rely more on zoologists who are not necessarily based with us, but who want to use the logo of Sandy to put their word out there. And they want to, because we are the science into policy institution, the work they do, they want to see the department taking notice of it, and in many ways, the path to that is through Sambi, so we basically use that. So aviation, at the minute, there's one, and I think that person has actually retired, employed at Kwaleha. And obviously, my colleague is doing the math. We will be employing quite a few people in that. We're going to be building an education center, visitor center, boardwalks across the fragile coastal dunes there, and so there will be jobs there. Obviously, we want to put a sign on that N2 road for people to stop there on their way as they're going up the coast, and there for there to be services and things for them to see and do and rest, so that they spend the money there, and so that we can create and consume here, and yeah, and we charge them, and that way also create more things. The Limpopo Garden is an interesting one. There are 18 staff members there at present. Majority of them, in fact, all of them except one, is over 55. They're all heading towards retirement. And so
what, those of us are over 55 by an endangered species.
Including myself, too. But you're not alone. But no, no, I mean, I think that the Limpopo Garden really has got huge potential for being a place that when you're on your way to Punda Gate up there, that you can stop, that you can even spend the night. Public Works has built some lodges that have stood empty for 5 years or something like that. Our staff changed the sheets and sweep and things, and no one has ever stayed there. So yeah, it's a legacy issue. So we are really looking forward to be working with the Tuando Garden, and we really want to make it be a place where people stop. And so essentially the present staff, I think we've got almost all of them are retiring by the time, yeah, they're retiring in the next 3 years. The skills level is very low also. There's only one person with a degree out of the 18. So that's also an issue. But we will keep them until they retire, basically, the staff. So there, yes, there is potential for really ratcheting up job creation in that area. We also have got a MOU with UniVen, University of Venda, which is just across the road, more or less, from Arthur's Garden. And so we want a relationship with to excite the young students from UniVen to actually become garden managers, to become biologists, biodiversity specialists, and tourism specialists. So, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check on page 70. On the slide that's talking about the incubation field and school leavers, I just want to check how I'm getting these school leavers and unemployed graduates. And then I was just going to ask, how are you getting those from rural areas? Because I heard you said you talked about something like rural areas. Which rural areas do you engage with? Because we have challenges where you have internships and everything, but people who are living in rural areas are not part of those things. So I just want to check, how are you getting these people, or how are you advertising when you are looking for such people? Also, I'm asking, do you also consider people with disabilities on your programs? The last one is that, how are you contributing on the campaigns on Abawish? Because I'm seeing that you're talking about greening of schools. So your contribution in terms of Abawish. Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Now, before you answer.
I don't know if I can ask a question, but...
No, you can't. That's simple, you can't. You can't. It's only us who care. Only members of parliament. Yes. Yeah. Maybe just one difficulty that you decided to bring to yourself. Can you give us more details about these lodges of the Department of Public Works? Even if it is not now, give us more details so that we can interact with the relevant portfolio committee. If there are lodges, we want to know how many of them, when were they built, why is nobody has stayed there, who built them, which public works, the provincial department, national department, well, you invited them for yourself. So if you can give us that information, the sooner you have it. Because obviously we would like taxpayers' monies to be used, and there is no beneficiation for our people on the use of this important resource. You can, if you have the information now, by all means, if you don't have it, get somebody to assist you, but we need that information.
If we look at that slide, thank you of course for asking those questions. You touch on a challenge for everybody, I think, which is why when we started the Groen Sabinza program, we particularly wanted to focus on kids who either went to high school in rural areas or come from rural areas. So the majority of people, of young people in the Groen Sabinza program, come from rural areas, and they are hosted by institutions which are often not in rural areas. So for example, many of our gardens are hosting and skilling those young people, but they're also being hosted by NGOs and other departments. So that 818 Groen Sabinza pioneers are overwhelmingly from rural areas. And it's actually, it's very strange because there's a lot of pressure, I think, particularly from urban and peri-urban places where there's quite a lot of graduate unemployment. But in this case, we wanted to write the balance. So that would be very interesting. And I'll give you much more information about the metrics of that project. The rule is, in that project, is important. In terms of the other box, which is education and outreach, we really cannot have projects too far from our gardens around in that quarter, of the circle. So, because most of our expertise sits in the garden and then they outreach to them. So, in places where our gardens are in rural areas, like for example the Hantam district, there we have engagement with communities, and that's in a rural town. But for example, in Kirstenbosch or in Cape Town, the schools we engage with are mainly schools on the Cape Flats, in the formal and informal areas of the Cape Flats. So we want to engage at different angles. When you've got all your horticulturists and your garden people in an area like Watershulu Garden in Rudderwood, then they engage with schools in their environment. It will be very interesting. We've already got people from the Toyando community wanting us to engage with them. We haven't taken the garden over yet, and we've already done the research and engaged with high schools and primary schools in the Toyando area. So the rural areas we have a percentage of disabilities, but I would like to say to the portfolio committee that we could do better on the disabilities engagement in the sector, both in terms of the Groen Sabinza pioneers and other beneficiaries of our work. And I will raise that issue with my colleagues. And so many of the Arbor Days, Environment Days, and other key days in the environment calendar, the event is often run in our garden, whether it's through deer, water fairs, etc. So we do lots of that. Thank you, Chair. About the lodges, so it's in Toyando. It's Limpopo Public Works, and you shouldn't ask me too many questions here, Tarara, because we don't own it yet. We don't own it yet, and the issue is that when you go and visit, and maybe it's a good idea for the proponents to go and visit, because it was quite a surprise for me when I visited, there on the land of this garden, which we have not yet taken over, are five lodges in one corner. And these lodges were built by extended public EPWP, Limpopo. Ostensibly for tourism. That's for tourism. So which is why there is a possibility that people could stop on their way to the Punda Maria Gate from Gauteng, and have a garden moment in these lodges. Because what I assume you would not want, is that we throw it down, because it would be a waste of public money. So we must think of a way, when we take it over, which we haven't taken it over yet, when we take it over, what would be the most useful way of using those lodges? But the fact of the matter is they are there.
They have not been used for 5 years.
They are standing empty.
Okay, fine. We will visit that one.
Yeah, it would be useful, yeah.
We will visit that one. Colleagues, that brings us to the end of this interaction. Just one matter of housekeeping. Colleagues will know that I raised an issue that we all agreed on. We are giving you copies of our resolution on the matter. And because we will have to, I will have to sign on your behalf so that the matter is before Parliament. The matter that I've raised with you is on the amendment to the Kyoto Protocol. And as we have stated, is the second commitment to this protocol. And in our report, we say that the Pastoral Committee on Environmental Affairs have been considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Doha Amendment to the Kyoto Protocol to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Recommend that the House, in terms of Section 23.2312 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1996, ratify or accept whatever term that will be applicable. We are putting both so that we don't put one and only to find that these international processes want another term. They set international agreements. Is that our view? Is that what we agreed on? Yes, ma'am. Malula.
Agreed, sir.
Agreed. Thank you. I think I'm not pushing this for the second time because we agreed on it again. Yes, yeah. Thank you very much. Then probably it will then come before the House probably next week or so. Colleagues from the department and from the entities, let's thank you very much. We are now more knowledgeable on the South African Weather Service, on the South African National Biodiversity Institute. We really appreciate information that we have received in this session, because this session was information sharing. As you will know, many of us are quite new. So before we engaged on any other issues, including your annual reports, it was important that we know what you do. So I think from our side, we would like to thank you. I don't know whether anything that they might have is now ready. That goes to the stomach. It's ready now. Yeah.
But I hope that something will be ready for you to grab something before you go home. You are all working within this department, or some of your entities reporting to this department. There is a debate on a matter that is also probably dear to your heart, and that's rhinoporting and its impact on our heritage. That debate is this afternoon. And so if you are able to stay, stay so that you hear what is being said on this matter. So you are being invited. That's the second invite. The first invite, let's go and grab something to eat outside there. Thank you very much, Didi, and thank you to the Minister as well. Honourable members, thank you very much.